Warning, the host of this podcast has a penchant for the pontification of puns and an altruistically alienating affection for alliteration. If you suffer weak constitution or get annoyed easily, you may want to seek prior medical advice or avoid this particularly perplexing podcast as the host is unbalanced as a washer full of shoes. Salutations, stoners. Here we are again with another installment of the Chronic Insomnia podcast. Thank you guys for listening, of course. I love your support. We've got a really interesting guest today. I'm going to let him talk a little bit about himself. Frenchie Cannoli, what I think is someone who is keeping alive not just a specific culture, but something that is a part of human culture. So go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell us a little about who you are, why you're here.
Well, I'm here because you invited me, and thank you for that.
Thank you for coming.
Who am I? I'm a Frenchie that traveled for 18 years when he reached 18. And I lived for basically 20 years in producing country and made ash in this producing country. Then I came to the States, and because there is no ash culture here, I needed to introduce what is traditional ash to a certain point, and to show the science behind. That's basically what I'm into, trying to show the value of tradition with the science backing it up.
Right, and you say, you know, like there isn't, and I agree with you there. There's, unless you work in the industry, you know, unless you've spent more than 5-10 minutes around, you know, a flowering plant or in a drying room, and you know what happens when you touch it, there really isn't, you know, a history or, you know, a background here in the States anyway, you know, as far as hash goes. It's just like, I know, you know, scissor hash, and, you know, you can make shoe hash and trim and things like that. And like, I've made it known before, but like, I was watching some of the documentary and some of your shows and stuff like that. And it's one of the oldest, you know, by far, it's probably the oldest form of cannabis experimentation besides, well, you know, smoking the plant.
I am not even sure that they smoke the plant before they made the ash and eat the ash, to tell you the truth.
And that's believable. Like,
if you look at the history of cannabis, it was born 28 million years ago in the high plateau of Tibet. And it's an evolution of humulus, of hops, which is the more subtropical plant. Mm-hmm. So that plant genetically was geared toward going through the grassland and mountainous range towards Central Asia and the Mediterranean Sea. And the plant was in Europe 6 million years before humanity.
Right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. That means that the plant has been growing in a fertile crescent, the richest place on Earth, for 4 million years before Homo erectus stepped in the fertile crescent.
So who was here first? I mean, it's you know, this is the cannabis's planet.
I mean, I believe that Homo erectus, which is the genus that had the biggest survival rate, it survived for 1.5 million years and inhabited Africa and Eurasia from Spain to Indonesia. They really knew their stuff, okay?
Right.
So for those people to meet such a plant in such an habitat, I don't think so. And the first things you do when you want something from that plant, if you're a nomadic tribe, it's food. It's
exactly.
The seeds. But if you touch the seeds, you get sticky finger. And what you have on your finger, it's aromatic and sticky. There is a good chance that the first ever experience of humanity with a cannabis resin, it's by ingesting a little bit to check what it is. Because every plant that those people have found, they were totally, the only way of survival is to learn everything from everything you encounter.
You would watch the animals, they'd eat the berries and see, you know, whatever they were eating, you could eat as well. So it would stand to reason. Yeah, they don't have fire, so they would have to. So I agree.
The only mean of survival is what nature gave you. You start barehanded and naked. Okay?
Exactly.
2 million years ago, when the smallest cast was 800 pounder, like saber-tooth and shit.
Right.
And the smaller herbivore, twice the size. Dude.
Yeah. You had to watch.
And they walk from the south, the tip of Africa, and inhabited the whole continent. It's like you really have to give respect to such a skill of survival.
Exactly. It's one of those things. Like, it's back then there was nothing. It was, if you were going to survive, it's because of what you did. It's what you paid attention to, and you know, you had to you couldn't go to a store, you couldn't barter. There was no barter or trading system. It was literally what you found, you know, what you made your home, where, you know, how you survived, and what you watched nature do. You know, if you watched animals eating something, you could eat that. You know, if you watched, you know, if you found river, you know, where the river was, or roots and things like that. So it makes sense that, and probably, you know, you've got these Neanderthals, these Homo erectus walking through these lush, huge plants, and they're covered in hair. And if you walked through it before, you've got that all in your skin. So yeah, like, this plant is reaching out to them and saying, hey, you know, like, pay attention to me.
You know how difficult it is to bloody hide that plant today.
Right.
Okay. Then in front of that, you have the ultimate survivor who is his world knowledge. It's animal behavior, plants. It's like everything that he needs, it comes from nature. So everything that nature gives you, any new plant, everything you want to know, everything to be able to do something for it. It's like, it's simple. Humanity needed to go through 200,000 plants, just the one who does berry and seeds, to get 1,000 or so edible plants, 100 or so plants that you can domesticate, and the 6 plants that are still feeding the planet. Since 13,000 BC, we have not domesticated another plant.
That's ridiculous.
Okay.
That seems, with everything out there, that seems a little ridiculous.
They did know their stuff. So it's like, now to go from sticky finger to sticky hand, you don't need a stretch of imagination that big. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's when they go from live resin sticking on your hand to dry sieving that it starts to be impressive. And then if you think that they figure out that everything is in that little gland that we cannot even see, and further than that, they used it to press it so they could decarb the cannabinoid and make them psychoactive.
Dude, right.
How do you figure stuff like that?
I mean, it's one of those things. It's because it's amazing to think about, and it's baffling. But if you realize that we have those receptors in our brain, so the plant is talking to us. Like, cannabis was meant to be consumed by the human brain, and the human brain is designed to receive cannabis. So if you pay attention, and I was watching your video, and it's interesting. My primary background is culinary. So I've worked under a lot of master chefs and different things like that. And I attribute it to, you know, to someone pulling sugar or making, you know, noodles by hand, watching you do that and through each bag and reading the grains and reading the water and things like that. It's one of those things that it's just, if you pay attention to what you're doing, you know, it's going to tell you what it wants you to do.
Well, the trichum gland, it's the defensive system of the plant.
Mm-hmm.
So inside it holds everything that the plant has been going through her life with the outside world. It's like a book. It's a bibliography of the life of the plant. This is the book I read. I cannot read it all.
Right.
But this is my way to understand what's the plant expressed because of its habitat. You know what I mean? And it's like, doesn't matter the cultivar, the place change everything.
Right. Right. I mean, like it's, and that's the, one of the beauties about cannabis is it's back and forth. I call it the similar differences and the different similarities. You know, you can take one cut and grow it in 12 different places and get 12 different plants, or you can take, you know, 12 different plants and grow them the same way. And it's going to be, you know, you're going to get the same thing where you're going to get something different. And it's not necessarily, you know, how you do it, but it's the environment. It's who you are. It's where you're at, you know, lowlands, highlands, indoor, outdoor. You know, you can do so many different things, but then you can do so many different things the same way.
The farmer energy also.
Right.
Like it's, I have experienced it. It's like when your farmer is full power and good energy, life is beautiful. The plants are amazing. The year after, he's breaking up with his girlfriend. Then it's mm-hmm. like, it's ugly. Literally, it's not good anymore.
It's hard.
It's like it's the plant feel it. It's, that's why I consider myself like a winemaker.
Right.
I am 101% dependent on my source of basic product to make my ash. And I wish if we cannabis industry would be like the wine industry. The best winemaker in the world don't have their name on the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they don't care to be known. What they care is to blow your palate away, to give you something, to give you an experience that you never had. When you have that experience, what really makes that experience, it's not the dude that made the wine, a little bit to a certain point, because it transforms something that nature gave him in another product. But the goodness of the greatness come from the genetic, from the terroir, the land, the climate, right. The cultivar and the farmer.
Right. It's just you have the ability to, like any master vintner, to read the grapes or to read the buds. You know their potential and you know how to coax out that maximum potential. So why not share that with the world? You know, like why not? You know, if you can clearly tell that you love what you're doing and you're happy. So why not? You know, like everything else in the cannabis community and in the culture and the movement. You know, we're here because of each other, and we all want everyone else to experience everything that this plant has to offer.
Well, I wish it was like that. I consider myself a craftsman, and what I know today has been given to me. And some work I put on top of it.
Right.
And to give this to the next generation, it's my duty.
Right.
It's called evolution. In many languages, same spelling. I'm not doing something different or special. I'm just giving the knowledge to the next generation so they can be better than me, because that's the name of the game. You know what I mean? In the cannabis industry, we don't have that sharing to that level where you want the next generation to be better than you, because being the best when you're an extractor or a winemaker, well, it's not you. You're that good because you got the product. Right. So it's like the greatness of a winemaker is so dependent on the source. The greatness of an extractor, it's so dependent on the source that let's talk about the source that is the source of everything, and let's forget right. a little bit about the dude that made it, so that it's all the brand. It's not the name of the guy who made the stuff. It's where it come from.
Right.
Or if it's not like if you look at a wine label, everything is about the source.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the label in a cannabis industry, there is almost nobody that gives the source of their product.
No, you may see like the name of the farms back on the back label, maybe, you know.
Rare. There is not 0.5% of any product, ash, extract, topical, anything that is made from resin, nobody tell you where it comes from.
And a lot of it's because trim, like, and yeah, like you see, you know, in when you're buying things, you're working in the industry and stuff like that, you know, nobody really pays attention to where you get your trim. Like you buy your flower from the different growers and things like that. And they're like, oh, hey, yeah, you know, I got this extra couple of pounds of trim or something like that, or some sugar leaf. Do you guys want that? Yeah, sure, whatever. So I've noticed that. And it's going to, I feel anyway, that it's going to take a while, but that's going to start to die down. And we're going to start to get more of, and for lack of a better word, the artisan, you know, culture, because once everything plateaus and it becomes normalized, we're going to be able to experiment now, because now everybody's a little more competitive. Everybody's like, I want to make my, you know, my name in the industry. I want to make my money. I want to, you know, promote my whatever. And it's because it's a state to state thing. It's a city to city thing. So there's a lot of competition. So once everything opens up and it gets a little more, you know, broad spectrum as far as regulations and customs and things like that, I think that we're going to see a lot more of, you know, what you're trying to do and what you're, you know, keeping alive is the traditions of the techniques and the old ways of doing things passed down generation to generation, you know, throughout the years. It's just nowadays, it's a very quick flash trendy culture. You know, everybody wants the carts and the vapes and the shatters and the stuff that they can mass produce and quickly do. And everybody doesn't realize, you know, that hash, I personally love it. It's versatile. You can do anything with it. If you know what you're doing and you do it well, it's not complicated, but it's, you know, it's something that takes practice, but it is a simple process. If you think of it, you know, step by step, it's a very simple process.
Very simple process.
You know, you just have to know what you're doing and know what to look for. Very simple process.
Beyond knowing what you should do, you need to learn the science behind the trichome. It's like, to give you, I'm a very good example. I lived in producing country for 20 years, solid. Every year, I would spend 3-4 months deep into a producing region to make my stash for the year. Mm-hmm. Okay? So all my life, I made ash. All my friends make their ash. It's not really a big deal. Then, when you go beyond that, the ability to share that knowledge, I had used many tools from different type of sieve, from Morocco to Lebanon to Pakistan, like many dry sieving tech, and I could even stick live resin on my hand. So I had a huge knowledge of the tool, but I didn't know the product. And when you're a craftsman, there is two things in your life: the product and the tool, because the tool is defined by the product. Right. I didn't even have the right name for the product I was working with. We call that pollen in producing country. So when I came to learning the science behind, it's like, wow, what is a trichome?
Right.
In the plant kingdom. Wow. That's a defensive system of the plant kingdom, and it can make 200,000 compounds from the most deadly to the most beneficial and everything in between. It's like, whoa, that's hardcore. Then it's like, okay, what's special with the cannabis trichome gland? Well, it's the only plant that can biosynthesize two toxic compounds, the most common in the plant kingdom, terpene, that are highly toxic, and phenol, you don't OD on phenol, but you can make yourself pretty sick.
Right.
And the plant can biosynthesize that and make 150 plus medicinal compounds, the cannabinoid. It's like, yo, that's pretty hardcore. So after that, I say, okay, now I want to know how it's formed inside the gland. What's going on? And then it starts the magic, because then I could learn that CBGA is the first one. And then it creates THCA, CBDA, CBCA, etc., etc. That transform again through oxidation into psychoactive compound when they lose that carboxyl acid, that A. Right. And then you can bring it even further down. The THC can become CBN, the CBD can become CBND, and that another, it's called degradation. Mm-hmm. But in my book, it's another cannabinoid with a lot of value at many different levels. So it's like, wow, that's becoming fascinating. And now I can make the hash I want. I'm not just making hash. I can make pure CBD hash. I can make hash that has all the, that has no psychoactive effect whatsoever because I don't decarb it. Right. I can decarb it like 30 and 40% decarb, and you have twice the amount of THC entering your blood system. Because when you smoke, you transform maybe 20, 25%, right. Depending how you smoke it, the decarb. So it's like I can give you a much stronger hash. It's like it's my playground has become much, 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 much bigger. And my ability to manipulate and play around with what the plant give me has multiplied to an amazing level. And just because I looked for the science behind.
So with that, how do you feel about the new processes with like the live resin and the presses and things like that, where it's even less of a process? It's literally just, you know, putting the plant into the micron bag and pressing. Like, you're not.
I mean, I do ice water, huh?
Right. But
that's not an extraction. Mm-hmm. That's still sieving.
Right.
Logically. Technically speaking, to extract anything, you need to take it from something that holds it in its body, from a matrix. Mm-hmm. Okay? A trichon is a protuberance. Mm-hmm. So you, technically speaking, you cannot extract a protuberance. But on top of it, that gland is attached to the stalk by an abscission.
Right.
An abscission, it's what attach a fruit or a leaf to a tree. They are meant to fall at maturity by themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's like, do you extract fruit from a tree? I don't think so. Okay?
Right.
That's and for me, it's super important because the tech, if you think that you're extracting and you read the definition of the word extraction, it's not going to give you any clue using ice water.
Right.
If you read the definition of the word sieving, then you have the logical approach to your to the methodology you use.
Mm-hmm. And so that's the nomenclature.
Majorly important. You extract when you take the resin from the gland. Mm-hmm. And then you enter different territories. It's very much like wine and other alcoholic beverage. Okay? To make wine, you need to crush the whole fruit. Mm-hmm. And you need to store it in certain way and age it to get to greatness. That's what I do with the hash. There is a transformation that happens in the body because the matrix that created the resin, or for the grape, the matrix that created the juice and right. the sugar mm-hmm. is inside the wine, and it creates a transformation. For wine, it's fermentation. For hash, we don't have a name. We have never studied it. I'm just starting with a company in Canada. Mm-hmm. We started a study research on aging. And when you take the resin from the gland, you leave a huge part of the equation behind. It's very different. If you smoke ash and the resin made from that ash, the experience is radically almost opposite. Right. They're both very interesting and amazing, but they're very, very different. So why we are trying to compare different techniques to create different products? It's like from grape juice, you mm-hmm. can make many different alcohol up to 99.9% pure. Right. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So now in the industry, there is many modes of extraction. but everyone is, my extraction is better. Rosin is better than BHO. BHO is better than this. And this is better than that. It's like, dude, are the people who are fanatic of whiskey who dare look down on the craftsmanship of somebody who do 25 years old tequila or cognac?
Right.
Or, you know what I mean?
It's not better. It's the same different. In different categories.
It's different.
Like it's you know, apples and oranges. Like it's all fruit, but they're completely different.
Why cannot we appreciate the diversity that the plant is giving us and giving credit to the craft that create all those amazing stuff? It's like, it's different. Pay respect. If you have the time, even you maybe want to learn from from this guy, even if it's not your stuff. But it's like, at least show the respect for the dedication the dude has to create a great product. Even if you don't agree with the product, even if you don't like it, you cannot say that what you do is better, because it's not true.
And I'll admit, like, I've been smoking cannabis the majority of my life. But I will admit that up until probably my mid to late 20s, when I started working in the industry, I didn't realize that, you know, you could smoke a joint of weed and it's going to be one feeling, or you could smoke a joint of hash and it's going to be something completely different. And when I started to realize that, and that's when extractions and the concentrates and the different sides started to come out a lot more. And it's like, wow, they're, you know, this one thing has all of these different, you know, properties. And we're constantly finding new cannabinoids and you know, the new phenotypes and terpenes are now a big thing. I mean, they've been around for a while, but they're a big thing now. People are starting to ask questions about them more. But yeah, I think that's one of the things is people need to realize that it's not just, you know, a high. It's not, you know, just that feeling. It's not like if you smoke this and this and this and this and this, you're all going to feel the same. No, like if you smoke this, you're going to feel this. If you dab this, you're going to feel this. You know, if you hit this, you're going to, you know. So I think that's one of the things. And again, it's nomenclature and it's recognition. And it is about understanding and an appreciation for what's, you know, what's being done. But I think that once people start to realize that it's not just one thing, it is a plant that becomes endless.
I mean, for most people, it's two things, indica or sativa.
Right.
Which is really bad because it's not even accepted as a botanical source. You know what I mean?
Right.
And when people talk about indica and sativa, actually, they're talking about the effect more than the look of the plant.
Right.
And so if we talk about effect, well, it's not a plant that is tropical or a plant that comes from the mountain of the Hindu Kush, it's not where they're born that it's going to give you the effect. It's not even the spectrum of cannabinoid that's going to give you that effect. It's a terp. The terpene make it all. So if you, depending on the experience you want to feel, you have to pay attention to the main terpene of the flower you're buying,
right?
Or the ash you're buying, or the extract. It's like, that's what really makes the difference in the experience.
So what's your opinion on like the synthetic terpenes that are out now? I've always felt like you can definitely tell it's got like a dust flavor on anything that you've got. When there's synthetic terpenes, it almost like it's difficult to explain in a flavor palette wise, but it almost tastes like a separation between the flavors. So what is your, like, with the thought on that that's becoming a thing?
So I wouldn't touch synthetic terpene because there is amazing source of natural terpene. In a huge quantity. I really don't understand why you would go for synthetic. But also, like I say, terpenes are highly toxic. Mm-hmm. It's not made to smoke. The plant can transform it into something beneficial, but that's only the cannabis plant.
Right.
Okay? So when you go into adding terpenes, well, there is plateau that you have to respect. You go into something that is, it's aromatherapy. It's pretty scientific. It's not something you play around with. Mm-hmm. Like you have to be really careful with your terpene. You don't want synthetic, but even the natural one is like, I lock you in a room and I pour terpene here. I can make you feel any feeling to a level where you're going to ask me to stop. You know what I mean?
Right.
Just because that terpene has such an effect in our mood and our system. So when you ingest it and you smoke it, you need to know what you're taking, and you especially the amount of it. It's like there is too much is just too much. Like everything else, if you go to a certain level, well, it's not medicinal anymore.
Right.
It becomes toxic again.
No. So what was the early moment on when you started that you realized that this was it, this was what you wanted to do, and you know this is what you wanted to spend, you know, your time and life energy on?
Well, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I had a childhood where I was brutalized with love by my parents.
Right.
And brutalized without love by the education system. Okay? They beat the shit out of me.
Right.
And society for me was everything I didn't want to have nothing to do. I learned how to lie and fake my mom and dad's signature. I was 11 years old. Okay? It's like society was creating the worst environment for me when I was a child. My my way to get outside it was reading adventure books. And my heroes were like crazy dudes like Burton, who discovered the source of the Nile, who went to Mecca, who translated the 1001 Nights. Another one is a French dude who spent 25 years in the Red Sea. Mm-hmm. Smuggling ash and weapon. Like I read his book about smuggling ashes. I was 11 years old. I didn't know what was ash.
Right.
But like his life in the Red Sea, smuggling and diving and all of that stuff, I was, wow, this is the life I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted that freedom. And then I became a teenager. Sex is too much part of your life. You forget your kid dream.
Right, your childish dream.
And I was 17 years old, facing life. So it's like, as much as I had hated my childhood, society, adult life, looked like it was going to suck even more.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, whoa.
That's the perfect analogy. Yes, it's going to suck.
But I was stuck. I didn't mm-hmm. know. I didn't know. And my best friend, after worrying about for 6 months, actually invited me to smoke my first joint. He was worried that our friendship would be broken because hashish was so evil at that time.
Right.
He was afraid to scare me off, basically. He did not.
No, it never did. It brings people together. It never scares people.
And that first joint, it's like I find the joy I had when I was a little boy, when life is so beautiful that you love for the pleasure of loafing.
Mm-hmm.
You run just because running. You know what I mean? It's like
right.
that pure, pure pleasure. It's like this brought everything back into perspective. And the only things I wanted again was to get out of Europe because mm-hmm. of the pressure when you smoke ash, because don't people telling me that is the most evil thing that I could do to myself, to my family and my best friend. I didn't really trust society because they keep lying to me all my life. Mm-hmm. And I was feeling such a joy out of it. There is no fucking way it can be that bad. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
But the pressure was so intense that my only way out was definitely to travel.
Right.
And as soon as I was 18, I traveled for 18 years solid without even going back to France.
Right.
That's what I did.
What was in that time of traveling, like what was one of those things that just kind of blew your mind? Like you had to take a moment and say, I'm actually here and doing this. Like what was that moment?
There is quite a few, but I think the most intense was in India, because India came later. I did a few hashish producing country before, where you work in a winter because it's dry and cold,
right,
and you deal with bundle, dry bundle of flour. So there is nothing really sexy about it.
Right.
And already my culture make me not look at the flour, and because I look only, I'm looking for the resin. So I didn't have that relation with the plant until I went to India, where you literally stick the resin on your hand, the plant live standing at the peak of its flowering cycle in a remote valley in Himalaya at 8,000-9,000 feet. You have eagles flying. It's intense. The smell of it when you roll, it's like months after months, every day, the resin seep into your body.
Right, so it dyes your skin.
Like, I never really think of it, but it's like, you're so loaded with terp and cannabis that it's unreal. The feeling of, it's simple. I never went back to a ash producing country after my first time in India. There is nothing in my life that could have stopped me spending 3-4 months in a mountain. Only the birth of my daughter broke that.
That's something
so amazingly intense. It's an overdose, an orgy of terpene and the plant. It's like it's there live in your hand. You just caress it slightly. It's like you don't even destroy it.
It's throwing it at you. Like it wants you to take it.
If you crush it, you're going to have water and chlorophyll, which you don't want.
No.
If you have water on your resin, it doesn't stick anymore. So you really have to be nice and light in your in touching the plant to be able to collect the best of the best, quoi.
Right. So what's your opinion of the industry today? Like how it is right now, you know, with the legislation, with trends and products and everything. What is your opinion of the status of things right now?
Well, in America?
Currently, because
But you live in a bubble here. Mm-hmm. It's like you really have to understand you're an island.
Right.
Everything is different. So ash and sieve resin is part of the concentrate. The American ash is unpressed, it's white.
Right.
It looks very much like a BHO. That's how it started. The name,
the wax and,
solvent, the ice wax, solventless extract, the whole anal PB people talking about extraction. It's all a comparison with BHO, because BHO is the groundbreaker.
Right.
They're the cutting edge. They have the most amazing tool that is used by the perfume industry to capture the most volatile terpene. It's like what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
They're showing it every day. You know what I mean?
It's like
they're the one that brings the new that everybody copy doing different tech. You know what I mean?
Right.
And America is really into the concentrate world, but extract. The rest of the world smoke ash.
Right.
The impact of extract on the world market, it's really hard to figure, but it will not be as impressive as it is as it has been here, because it was born here.
Right.
Concentrate was, extraction was really truly born here to the level. We were making all in a good old day in producing country, but it's like this is beyond that range, you know, right. When you create great product. The market here, it's not legal. It's like, how can I be legal when on my packaging, I'm telling the public that I'm selling an illegal drug into the legal market with the benediction of the Californian states? That's not legalization. I mean, it could always almost be called racketeering.
Because definitely, it's always been kind of like a compromise market between the legal and the illegal.
If you go to Japan and you go to sell stuff in a tree, in a street, and you're in a Yakuza district, in a gangster district, well, you give them money.
Right.
Exactly. You know what I mean? It's like there is, if you sell something on somebody else's turf, especially if it's illegal and you have its benediction, it's not legal.
Right. Like, so it's kind of one of those things that it's progressing, but especially here in the country. And you're right, we are in a bubble. Like it's definitely a trend or a niche market. It's not how it is in the rest of the world, where, you know, it's a part of culture. It's a part of society, good, bad, or indifferent. You know, it's not just a trend. It's not just something to get the two floors, you know, of the Senate fighting against one another, or, you know, it is a part of human history, you know, ups and downs everywhere else. And it needs to be respected and treated as the, you know, the amazing ancient entity that it is.
It needs to be unscheduled. I mean, everybody knows the history of prohibition. Can we accept that we made a big mistake and it should have never happened, and we start from zero so that we can actually study the plant, real plant, not the stuff grown in wherever here. You know what I mean? It's like there is so much scientific data proving that we made a huge mistake, that it was mostly based on racism,
fear and
promoting, you know, the old industry by product.
Right.
It's like, okay, can we accept that that was a huge mistake and it's time to go beyond that, leave the old product and the racism behind, and get into using the most important natural resource we can have to change the planet? You know what I mean? And work together for that. It's like we need to reach that point. Because
that's unfortunately the one thing that we have to overcome is just that. It's just swallow your pride, admit that you fucked up. Like it's out now. Everybody knows the proof is, you know, is everywhere. And so it literally was just, you know, it was the reefer madness. It was the crazy propaganda. It was because they wanted to control the population and they wanted to remain in power.
One dude that has never even checked scientifically. It's like, so when you're in power now, it's not you who made the mistake. It's that guy so long ago. So it's like, it's your government that made it happen, but the impact it would have for the U.S. to just unschedule, so the U.N. can totally unschedule too, and then you have a world market. Right. Then we're talking. Then you need to compete or for quantity or for quality. If you want to grow quantity, you better visit some producing country before you make that decision.
Right.
Because those people have been growing quantity for millennium.
As long as there have been people around.
Illegally. And they're using genetic that is adapted to their region, so they don't need the support, infrastructure, the cost, and everything that come producing it in quantity here. I'm telling people, literally, if America goes for quantity, America will not be relevant in the game in the next 5 years.
No, not at all.
Of world legalization. The only edge, true edge that America has come from
innovation.
The West Coast. It's the diversity of the genetic and the know-how of the people. It's the terroir they have.
Right. Like,
they have uniqueness.
Mm-hmm.
And in my eyes, Norcal is a Bordeaux of cannabis. I have seen many producing countries. I have never seen that.
Right.
It's like that. That sheer diversity of terpene, of plant, and it's plants that have adapted through generation in those places. This is actually the only edge you have in a world.
Right.
If you don't protect those farmers, if you don't protect the small farmer and regenerative farming, not only you don't have a chance in a world market of cannabis, but you're going to finish destroy your land.
Right.
There is very little time left for us poisoning the soil that we have. If we don't go into serious husbandry of the soil, if you don't give life back to the soil, if we don't do regenerative farming, well, we don't even have a future.
Right. You can only take so much. Right, but there's nothing left. Absolutely, and I love everything, and it's really good, and it's refreshing to hear, you know, people talk about what needs to be done, you know, regardless of opinion or you know what other people think, or like it's there are sometimes that the world just needs to do it, and like when you said with our only shot here in America, I think you know there's nothing wrong with one over the other. There's nothing wrong with doing quantity or nothing wrong with doing quantity. So you shouldn't feel bad, you know? And I think here in this country, we try to do everything and as much as possible and we need to stop. It's retarded or stupid or bullshit or whatever. But I think that, you know, that you're absolutely right. Like if we try to compete with, you know, with other countries that have been doing this since those countries existed, you know, we're going to lose. We need to the innovation and the advances and things like that. Absolutely.
Or if not lose, you're going to have a serious competition.
Right.
While nobody does quality. And people telling me that doing only quality is not possible. Dude, look at France.
Exactly.
Look at Italy. That's what we do. We do quality and we're fucking proud of it because we can do it.
Exactly. You know and I think... Yeah, and I think that's what I was talking about. Like, once everything normalizes, we're going to see. It's a bit of a struggle, but once everything normalizes, we're going to see the more craft side of it and the pride. I love talking to you. This is wonderful, and I want to do this more. We're gonna have to cut things a little short. We're running out of time. So again, thank you, Frenchie Cannoli. Check out all of his stuff. The YouTube. Check out his your site. FrenchieCannoli.com. What is it? Frenchie, what's the?
Yeah, FrenchieCannoli.com. You have not only you have the video I have on YouTube, but you have all my writing, all the book I read, the reference I used.
I've got all those up. I'm reading them right now.
You have a chart of classification of concentrate. You have a chart of a kind of scoring system that goes beyond. Test potency and smell, and you have everything about that initiative on aging ash. All the results we get, we're gonna post them here so that people can follow the progress of the study.
It's wonderful, and it's a lot of information. And the Frenchie Dreams of Hashish, I love it. It's an amazing documentary. It's really good. So check all his stuff out. And again, guys, thank you so much for listening and supporting. Thank you, Frenchie, for being on. I loved hearing your story and helping you tell your story, and I hope to work with you more in the future. And thank you, guys. Check out mjbulls.com, everything that they have there, all the amazing podcasts. If you haven't listened to them already, shame on you. You're a horrible person. No, check those out. Thank you, guys. It's great. You know, doing this, listening and helping people tell their stories. So thank you again. Appreciate everything. And remember, tune in, toke up, and think. Chronic Insomnia Podcast.